everyone. This is Cartoons to Castles,
the history behind the mouse and magic. I'm Melanie.
And I'm Jessica. We're best friends and Disney nerds who wanted to learn more about the history behind the Walt Disney Company's movies, shows, music, theme parks, and more, and share it all with you.
So thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy today's episode.
Welcome back, everyone, to episode 6 of Cartoons to Castles. Thank you again for all of the amazing ratings and reviews. Those are beyond helpful since that helps new people discover our podcast.
It sure does.
Yeah. So we're going to go ahead and read a couple of new reviews. And if you want to leave us one, then we will be sure to read your review on future episodes. Melanie, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, so this one is from Lauren Meisner. The title is Ladies Who Love Disney, 5 stars. Really enjoying this podcast as a fellow Disney history fan. Thank you, Lauren, for that nice review.
And we have one from Sarah RG. Disney Magic, 5 stars. Love listening to these two fun and engaging hosts. I'm a huge fan of Disney and I have learned so much from listening in. Looking forward to each new release. Thanks, Sarah.
Yay, we love those reviews.
Yes. So let's get into the topic.
I'm very excited. Sorry.
I am too.
Sorry. Okay. Go ahead.
That just showed Melanie's excitement. I'm super excited too. Even before we launched our podcast, I wanted to do this topic. So it's an exciting moment. We will be talking about the history of the three caballeros from the original film to the animatronics to the newer iterations of the caballeros in the TV shows, The Legend of the Three Caballeros, and of course, the newest DuckTales TV series.
And we have the perfect person joining us to discuss this topic. He is an actor and voice actor who has been in Shameless, Doc McStuffins, Our Daughters Love Doc McStuffins,
and much more.
Yes, he is also the voice of a member of the Three Caballeros, Jose Carioca, in the current DuckTales.
Please welcome Bernardo de Paula.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being on. We're so happy.
Yes. Thank you for joining us. I'm so excited that you're here. And some people who've been following me on Instagram or Twitter may be aware, I actually got connected with you because many people know my daughter Amelia is a huge DuckTales and Three Caballeros fan, where she's actually wanting us to retheme her room as DuckTales right now. And she has a Jose Carioca Disney bound she wears all the time. And I posted a video of her reacting to the second appearance of the Three Caballeros in DuckTales. We knew they were going to be on from previews. She didn't know. And we surprised her. She flipped out. And Bernardo, you were so sweet and recorded a message for her as Jose. And she still loves that. That meant a lot.
Pleasure. She's so sweet. She's so cute. Anytime, you know, it's such a gift for the actors, you know, because we're sort of like holding the torch. Like we're just sort of holding space for the character at the time. And so when we get to share the love that the fans have for the character and that kind of spills over onto us, it's the least I could do, man. Like imagine if we were little kids, you know, and like someone did that, like it would blow our mind, you know? So like,
yeah,
now that you can, why not, man? You know? So I'm happy to, I'm glad you liked it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. She loved it. And everyone loved the video of her reacting. It was so great. That was so special. But before we get into DuckTales and hearing about your experiences, and just your love of Jose, which I cannot wait to hear you talk about, let's go ahead. And I'm going to be talking about the origin of the Three Caballeros, meaning the original film and kind of the making of the movie, because personally, I think that this film, the 1945 film, I feel like it has the most interesting history probably compared to any other Walt Disney animated film, at least to me. So obviously they're legendary. Let's talk about the origin. I felt that the book South of the Border Disney by J.B. Kaufman, they put it really well. It's a book that literally just focuses on the South American tour that Walt Disney did to create the Three Caballeros along with Saludos Amigos. But in the book, he said that these films marked a super significant shift for Walt Disney Animation Studios because in the 30s, Disney established the studio as the world's premier animation company. And now in the 40s, they were establishing the studio as being able to harness its creative power and ability to storytell to help with the war effort. And with Saludos Amigos and the Three Caballeros, they were using art to help cement bonds of friendship and goodwill between the American republics. Like, that's a pretty cool thing that they did with these films. So these two films were actually made during what was called the Goodwill Tour, that a newly formed government agency, it was newly formed in 1940 at the time that this all takes place. This agency was called CIAA, the Coordinator of Inter-American Affairs. And they actually asked Walt and his animators if they would come to South America as part of their Good Neighborhood program. Now, what the CIAA approached Disney was they wanted him to create a series of short films that just had a smattering of South American atmosphere. That's all they wanted. They were like, can you just like put some South American atmosphere in some of your short films? But Walt, of course, you know, being as ambitious as he is, wanted to take it further. He wanted to specifically not just create short subjects, but he envisioned a whole series of animated films that would be a combination of the Walt Disney Animation Studios animation style, along with authentic Latin American characters, themes, cultures, music. And when Walt told the CIAA these ambitions and plans, they were thrilled. And so they worked up an arrangement to have him and his animators do a Goodwill tour of South America, and they would underwrite the costs. Now, during this time, the CIAA had asked a lot of Hollywood stars to visit Latin American countries to generate goodwill between the Americas. That was their quote-unquote their mission. But what was considered the crowning achievements of all their efforts for the Good Neighborhood program was considered this tour that Walt Disney and his animators did. A big part of the reason it was considered their most successful of these Goodwill tour endeavors was because previous visitors, mainly Hollywood actors who traveled to South America for these purposes, didn't really take the time to learn about the culture or politics of the countries. And so the efforts were not well received and oftentimes did more harm than good in developing ties between the U.S. and Latin American countries. I mean, again, they didn't take the time to learn about the culture. And sometimes, you know, they would talk about it in a way that felt kind of condescending, whereas Walt Disney and his group of animators really spent time researching as well as firsthandedly experiencing the country's cultures that they visited with genuine enthusiasm and appreciation. But a bit more on that later. During this time, they were invited to go on the Goodwill Tour. Walt Disney Animation Studios had been dealing with an animator strike, World War II creating a huge profit loss in the European market for Disney. So this was a super exciting opportunity for Walt and his animators to get inspired and create the films they wanted to, since budget wasn't going to be an issue, since the CIAA was going to fund it. And this was going to be a way for them to be able to get creative and tell the stories they wanted to tell, which they hadn't gotten to do for a couple of years.
Yeah.
So 18 members made up Walt and his animators, with the tour beginning when Walt landed in Rio de Janeiro on August 17th, 1941. So Walt and the CIAA were trying to avoid the past mistakes that occurred during the unsuccessful past Goodwill trips with other public figures. So part of the agreement was that Walt could not tell people he was there with any sort of association with the government at all. He couldn't say that. They thought people would instantly not like that he's there if they knew it was related to the government somehow. So he was instructed to say he was only there as a working artist gathering research material, which is true. That is why he was there. But he just had to leave out who had gotten him there.
Right.
Walt made it a point that he didn't want to go to the embassy like most people did during the Goodwill tour to learn about local sites and culture. He wanted him and his animators, like with any movie they animate, to have a more boots on the ground approach. They wanted to go out into the streets, explore and experience the local culture themselves. They went around the city sketching, painting, filming, photographing, listening to music. And when Walt and his animators started exploring the local culture in Rio de Janeiro, they realized very quickly that the Brazilian parrot played a very large part in the local culture. And they actually discovered this particularly at an exhibition arranged in honor of Disney and his animators. So there was an art exhibition arranged in their honor, featuring prominent Brazilian cartoonists, and almost all of the drawings and paintings they saw included the Brazilian parrot.
That's so cool.
Yeah. So after that, they visited local zoos, museums to study the Brazilian parrot, and they decided that that was the animal they were going to use to model Jose Carioca, who was created to be Donald Duck's co-star.
Yeah. That's funny. So it even predates, I always knew, like, I know how big a deal Zé Carioca is to Brazilians, but I had no idea that the parrot itself, the macaw, it, like, the love affair predates even Zé Carioca. That's interesting.
Yeah, and that was what inspired it. They just saw it everywhere in the art and everything. And so they thought, if we're going to make a co-star for Donald Duck, which they knew they wanted to do since they used him in a lot of short subjects, they were like, the Brazilian parrot is the way to go.
Obviously. Ooh. How could you use any other bird?
Yeah. So that's interesting. I'm going to cut in a little to my history to ask you a follow-up question, Bernardo. So yeah. So you thought that the love of the Brazilian parrot was kind of inspired by Jose. So that kind of gives a taste of what a big deal he is in Brazil.
Yeah. I mean, growing up, you have to understand, like, Zé Carioca is almost like the bald eagle is in America, you know, but it's sort of it's a character that represents, well, Carioca means someone from Rio de Janeiro. So, like, someone who lives in Rio de Janeiro is known as Carioca. So Zé Carioca literally means Joe Carioca. It's just like your buddy on the street, you know?
Yeah.
And so Zé, as we call him, because in Portuguese we say José Carioca. So we call him Zé. Zé is this laid back, loving life. No matter what happens, he just kind of glides through happy, you know, like there could be complete chaos around him. And he's still just loving life, brother, you know? So it's a very beloved character in Brazil.
Yeah, I love that.
And he's always stylish too. He's just
he's so dapper.
Yeah. Yeah. He's so dapper at all times. Yeah.
He reminds me of, like, the olden you know, like in the 50s, how, like, gentlemen would walk down the beach, you know, with, like, suits and, like, straw hats and, like,
and their cigar, right?
Yeah. You know?
Not like he really carries a cigar anymore, but he did in the 40s.
Exactly. And it's so interesting that you mentioned the history there that my father had told me when I was growing up. He said, you know why they did this? And I said, no. He said, this was part of a goodwill tour that Walt Disney did to try and drum up support for the United States so that the Americas wouldn't fall under the control of the Soviet Union. Because this was during the Cold War. And so it was like, we have to go in and stake our claim and get them on the good guy side, you know, at the time. So this was part of it. But it's so interesting to see that, like, there have been mistakes before. So they're like, don't let anyone know you're from the government.
I know.
Just happy artists. You know, but the beauty is the purity of Walt's intention. The purity of the love of the art and the love of the beauty of the culture is what transcends to this day. You know, it was like the political ramifications and whatever. But, like, if this had just been a guy going there on some government job, he wouldn't have put as much love and interest in learning about the true culture of the Brazilian people and the warmth and the attitudes and how there's this general just, like, friendship and love that is hard to describe. But kudos to Walt for really digging deep and really getting to something very, very pure, you know?
Yeah. Rewatching the movie, it really feels like it's a love letter to those regions.
Completely.
Yeah.
And I think what helps a lot is they did originally just want him to include some South American inspired atmosphere. It didn't even have to be exact. They just wanted it to be a bit inspired. And he wasn't even originally going to go on this tour. That's not how the CIAA approached Walt about it. Walt said, no, I want to go there and create shorts and a series of films for you. And they were like, oh, if you want to do all that, then let's set it up. While you're going. Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's great that he, you know, they approached him to just do this small thing, but he thought bigger about it. And he was like, no, I want to actually go there and experience it. So while Walt and his animators were in Brazil, they knew they wanted to use samba rhythms in the Brazilian films that they would make, meaning obviously they didn't make an animated feature film that was just based on Brazil, but they made a series of short films about each of the countries they visited. And so they went to samba concerts and even samba school and met with notable Brazilian musicians. A week into their trip, during a meeting to compare notes and plan their next activities, they gave themselves the nickname of El Grupo. And from this, the team of artists were referred to as El Grupo on this and all their other subsequent trips. They did several trips over the next few years. This was just the first. And their time in Brazil was originally only supposed to last 10 days, but was extended to 3 weeks because the more they got into the culture, the more they thought, well, we want to do this research or we want to meet these people. So it just kept growing and growing. And while they were there, which this wasn't part of their original plan, they decided to record Brazilian music played by Brazilian musicians in a recording studio in Brazil to use for future Disney films. And so they recorded a variety of sambas. One of them did eventually end up in a Disney film. Most of them didn't because I guess it turned out that a couple months before, this recording studio caught on fire, and this was the equipment moved from the recording studio that caught on fire, so it was mainly damaged, so most of the sounds were unusable.
Oh, like
they could use them for, you know, inspiration, but not really to put in a film. The quality was too low, but one did end up in a film, the one we're here to talk about, The Three Caballeros. I hope I'm pronouncing this as best as I can, but it's Flauta a Pandero. That was the one that was they were able to salvage and use. After Brazil, Walt and El Grupo journeyed into Argentina, then Chile. And throughout the tour, Walt met with presidents, government officials, radio personalities, dignitaries, reporters, filmmakers, performers. They signed countless autographs for children. It was even said more children recognized who Walt Disney was at the time than who the president was. Like, people loved Walt Disney. So just to put into perspective what a celebrity he was at this time. Also during the tour, Walt and his artists created professional contacts with prominent cartoonists, painters, musicians, and filmmakers that they would communicate with throughout the process of making Saludos Amigos and The Three Caballeros. And those are the two feature films that came to fruition from these trips, Saludos Amigos in 1942. And then we'll jump to 1944, which The Three Caballeros came out. I know some people say 45, and this year it's celebrating its 75th anniversary. It came out in 1945. In the United States, but it came out in 1944 in Mexico City.
Okay.
And I do want to say we need to do a whole other episode sometime about Walt and El Grupo's Goodwill tour, like the whole trip, yeah. Because there's so much more I left out. So we'll have to do a whole episode just about that trip. It's so fascinating. So the studio, Walt Disney Animation Studios, saw with Saludos Amigos that combining a variety of short subjects into one feature-length film worked super well for them. It was a much easier way to make money. So when they made the shorts for Saludos Amigos, they were originally just going to release them as individual shorts. But the market to sell short animated films was so limited, so there wasn't a lot of money-making potential. So they thought, let's combine them and try to tie them together somehow, and we'll sell it as a feature film. There's a lot more money in selling a feature film than a short animated film. After this, the success of Saludos Amigos, they moved on to what was dubbed South American Group Number 2, which was the working title for what would later become The Three Caballeros. Now, some of the short films that were within The Three Caballeros had already been in production, but when they set out to create a full-length feature production using them, so it was the same case of they made some shorts. It was Pablo the Penguin and The Flying Gauchito. They already made those before they decided this was going to be a feature-length film. But then they were like, no, we got to make this a feature-length film too, like we did with Saludos Amigos. So then that's where we get Panchito and Jose, where they thought for the rest of the film, let's also make it shorts, but it has to be more cohesive because we're going into this more intentionally than we did with Saludos Amigos. We have more of a plan and an idea of what we want to do. So from the beginning of the production, they decided this second film, they wanted to add a segment about Mexico. Six members of El Grupo actually visited Mexico City on their way home from South America in 1941 from that first Goodwill trip, and they drew many pieces of art from the surroundings they saw. And once word was going around that Walt Disney Animation Studios was planning a Mexico segment in their upcoming film, a full-fledged trip was requested by the Mexican government for Walt and El Grupo to come to Mexico and do a similar trip to their Goodwill tour because it created such good publicity.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine the kind of publicity that would have now if Walt were still alive? Like, Walt Disney and his animators are going to come for weeks and make a film about this country. It's amazing. They made several smaller two-week trips versus the two-month-long trip last year just because the available manpower at the studio was very limited. So they had to, like, do a bunch of smaller trips versus the one huge trip they did the year prior. And they did extensive research in Mexico during these frequent smaller trips. And nearing the end of the trips, Walt mentioned to the press that they were developing a character similar to Jose, similar to how Jose represented Brazil. They wanted also a co-star for Donald Duck who could similarly symbolize Mexico. He then headed home shortly thereafter with hundreds and hundreds of art pieces and phonographs from Mexican musicians to help with the creation of their second film from these trips. And in the beginning of 1943, they went back to Mexico to do auditions and screen tests for performers to be the on-screen live-action performers as well as voice actors. Yeah. And they would send these screen tests and auditions from Mexico. They would record them there, and they would send them to L.A. for Walt to help pick the casting. And so the feature, The Three Caballeros, is comprised of various segments. I'm going to go ahead and focus on the ones with, of course, The Three Caballeros. So let's talk about Bahia and La Piñata. The first two segments in the film are the Cold-Blooded Penguin and the Flying Gauchito. As I mentioned, they seem a little bit more random because they were made before this was decided it would be a feature. And with the Bahia and La Piñata segments in The Three Caballeros, where we meet Jose and Panchito, they feel a bit more cinematic and cohesive since those were made with the intention to be all tied together to tell one story. Also in Bahia, in that segment, we have Aurora Miranda as one of the live action performers who is such an iconic part of this film. She's on so many of the posters. She's on the original vinyl record cover. And her older sister is, of course, Carmen Miranda, who, it turns out, Aurora Miranda was cast in the film because Carmen Miranda served as technical advisor on the Brazilian material in Saludos Amigos. And the reason she was for publicity.
They thought,
let's have her say she was a consultant on Brazilian culture in the film. That'll be great publicity.
I have a sister who could do a good job.
So from meeting her, they got connected with Aurora Miranda. And so they approached her to be in the Bahia segment. So they both were both the Miranda sisters were a part of these films.
Well, they're both adorable, so. Well deserved.
Yeah. So when, you know, I saw recently the Walt Disney Archive shared on Twitter saying like the Miranda sisters played such an important part. And I was like, that's interesting because I thought only Aurora Miranda was in the movie. And so after I read that, I was like, okay, they were both a part of the movie. Just one was behind the scenes.
Yeah.
So something I want to note too that's significant in terms of the animation technology in The Three Caballeros is mixing live action with animation in these films. Of course, they weren't the first to do it. This happened long before with the Alice comedies, and other studios had done it. But what makes this film so significant is this is the first time live action and animation was mixed in color. It had never been combined in a film in color. It had only been done in black and white. And the reason this is a big deal is this added significant challenges to produce this because think about it. You have to make sure the color temperature and saturation matches the animation and the live action. You have to think about if the lighting is the same in both the animation and live action. And when you watch the 1945 Three Caballeros, you'll notice some parts you're like, I could see how that was a problem. Like just little moments, you'll notice the lighting is a little off. But for the most part, it's considering it was 1945, it's really amazing. So as they were working on the film in typical Walt Disney fashion, he was so excited seeing the work come to life that he wanted to take it a step further and have Aurora Miranda interact with Donald and Jose. So they weren't going to be side by side. She was actually going to be interacting and talking and touching them. So this added, of course, a whole bunch of other challenges.
And giving Donald kisses.
And so how they made this happen is they would first animate the animated parts first. Then on a live action set, they would have so they would have the actor in front of a transparent screen, and they would rear project the animation. So they they literally had cameras filming the animation being projected and the live action actors simultaneously.
That's wild.
I know. I can't even imagine.
I had no idea that was the process.
So they would record the animation live action in a single image. So instead of layering them, it was recorded in a single image. And it took 3 weeks to film Aurora Miranda's musical number. So it was a long process to get the lighting and everything just right when you're filming them both at the same time. Now, Walt Disney was so nervous that other studios would try to imitate his revolutionary process, because that was something that would happen then, that people would get word of what they were doing, what cutting edge thing they were doing, and try to copy it. So Walt Disney Studios was being very secretive and very closed off to outside eyes, but press knew something big was happening with this film and production. One article I read said, "Air of mystery surrounds a closed set at Walt Disney Studios. All that is known is that he has in process of development a new and revolutionary exploit in live action for his cartoon pictures." So they knew something was up. Now, to enhance what they were trying to do on the animation technology side, they went to Ub Iwerks, who was the go-to person at the studio for special effects. As Melanie mentioned on the Parent Trap episode, he was integral in helping with the split screen effects for the 1961 The Parent Trap to help Haley Mills look like a twin. And for the Three Caballeros, how I mentioned the characters were rear projected, the issue with that is there was no way to make the characters who were animated be in the foreground. They were always in the background because the animation had to be projected behind them. So Ub Iwerks developed a device where they could go ahead and still film it in the single image. And I, of course, don't know exactly how it works, but he was able to use some sort of then multi-plane camera system to put the animation they rear filmed in the foreground. So Ub Iwerks developed a device that could put the characters in the foreground.
You know, it's helpful to have an Ub around.
Good old Ub. So by mid-1943, the studio was getting deeper into the next segment they would work on, La Piñata, and finally fully developed the design and name of the segment's character slash Jose slash Donald counterpart, Panchito. And for the Acapulco sequence in the La Piñata segment, there is even more interaction between live action and animated characters. Now, this sequence was filmed over, this is the beach scene. This sequence was filmed over 2 months on the Disney live action stage. And what I learned actually this February at the set, I went to the 75th anniversary D23 event celebrating the Three Caballeros, and they showed pictures of them filming it. The Zorro parking lot, which is a parking lot on the Walt Disney Studios in Burbank, they emptied it all out of cars and they put in tons of sand and they filmed in the Zorro parking lot on the Walt Disney Studios lot. And that was the beach. And if you watch the movie, you will see that behind them, where you, there's all this sand, there's just a concrete barrier behind them. Like no palm trees or anything. It's just concrete behind them. And so next time you watch it, take a look.
I'll have to watch that again.
Yeah.
And they showed us a very panned out shot. That was a behind the scenes photo at the D23 event. And you could see the, you know, the Valley Burbank mountains, the Griffith Park mountains behind the cement barrier. But obviously they cut that part out. But I thought that was interesting. So I'll have to try to find that picture to share on our Instagram. But when it was time for the film's release, promotion had to be big. This was a very long endeavor. It cost a lot of money. Fortunately, not a lot of money for Disney, but a lot of money, you know, on someone's bill. So Disney, RKO, and CIAA joined forces in distributing the music of the Three Caballeros. They recorded the music in English, Spanish, and Portuguese to thousands of radio stations. They gave it to thousands of radio stations free of charge in three languages. And that was their marketing tactic. They're like, just put the songs on the radio for free. It's going to intrigue people. And that was their biggest form of promotion. And the other promotion included Three Caballeros comic books in various languages. And they even created a new dance step inspired by the Bahia scene. Yeah, they created a dance step and they were trying to be like, do this dance step. You know, it was called the Samba Django.
I want to learn it.
And it's inspired by a dance move that Jose does in Bahia. Oh, and so they tried to like promote this dance move as the newest cool dance move. But I love that.
The Macarena of the day.
Yeah. So it finally premiered in Mexico City on December 21st, 1944 at the Alameda. Now, this theater normally changed what it ran once a week, but it played this film for 2 months because it was doing so well.
Wow.
And it had its U.S. premiere in New York City on February 3rd, 1945 at the Globe, which is a theater near Times Square. And it was during a snowstorm, too. So it had a lot of hurdles, but the film did well anyway. That's People good. Made it to the theater, the premiere, during the snowstorm. Critics did have very mixed reviews. A lot of critics said it felt a little all over the place, which, like, I kind of get because, you know, they went into this not intentionally making it a feature-length film for half the time, but they felt it was all over the place. While other critics praised it for its technical and musical marvel, I did read one review from the LA Times where this sounded so 40s. A reviewer said, "I liked the music and the characters, but I was so confused by all the technical razzle-dazzle."
So confusing.
All the flashing lights, make it stop.
But everyone praised the music across the board. Everyone praised it as a musical marvel. So it didn't bomb, but it wasn't massively financially successful either. It was a very big success at the two theaters it premiered at, but nationwide, it was fine. It did fine, but it wasn't like a mega smash hit or anything. You know, they did spend a lot of money on it, but what they really made their money back on were the songs. The songs made a lot of money, particularly Bahia and You Belong to My Heart. They were international smash hits. And the movie was even nominated for 2 Academy Awards, Best Sound and Best Scoring of a Musical Picture. And of course, even if it wasn't a mega smash hit at the time of its release, we of course know it's timeless. Every Disney fan, even almost every non-Disney fan knows who they are. That's celebrating its 75th anniversary, and they're still getting... We're still getting them in 2 TV shows currently.
Yeah.
You know, that's a big deal. They're animatronics. And once you're an animatronic, you know, you're a Disney staple. If you could get it to be an animatronic, you know, you made it.
You're a legend.
If your animatronic happens to fall down and keep talking while he's face first on the ground, that's just a pro, man. That's just
I feel
a pro.
Like he learned his work ethic from Walt. Walt would have done the same thing. You keep falling, going. Just keep singing.
Just keep singing.
Yeah, I like that he sort of, that animatronic moment became sort of a metaphor for 2020. Yeah.
And for those who don't know what we're talking about, recently on the Grand Fiesta Tour at Epcot and Walt Disney World, the Jose animatronic fell down, but he just kept singing anyway.
Yeah.
He took a major header and just kept on singing.
Yeah, he sang right into the floor.
I responded saying, like, "Sorry, guys. Sorry, it was my bad. Wait, I did what?"
Right. So to wrap it up, it has withstood the test of time. It is a timeless classic, which brings us to Bernardo. I would love to hear you tell us a bit more about Jose. Like, I'm curious, were you a fan of the Three Caballeros growing up? Or tell us a little bit about your love for him.
I was born in New York to two Brazilian parents. So I'm first generation Brazilian American. So my immediate community was a lot of other Brazilian immigrants, and yet I was growing up as, you know, a New York kid. So, like, it was very clear to me sort of the dichotomy of what I was experiencing as an immigrant's kid and my other friends who were at school, you know. So having something, you know, back then we had this little reel-to-reel projector, and I had the Three Caballeros, like, 5-minute scene on a reel-to-reel projector. And I would watch it nonstop. I mean, it was like, it was just constant because it was the only, like, pop culture connection to my culture, you know, because it was like, I'm as American as the next kid, but yet, you know, they're not having barbecues with everybody speaking Portuguese every weekend, you know, like, so obviously I'm having a different experience than my guy friends who are going to baseball games with their dads, you know?
Yeah.
So having this sort of cartoon figure, sort of like a torchbearer for my culture, you know, meant a lot to me. And so years later, when I had the opportunity to have a shot at it, I just went, I called my agent, went nuts and was like, mine. So, yeah, and thank goodness everything worked out, you know, so it's very dear to me. And it's a very sort of ubiquitous character in Brazil. It's like he's the national mascot, you know, like growing up when the World Cup team scored a goal, Zé Carioca danced across the screen. It would say, "Goal!"
Whoa.
You know, like, and as I mentioned before, copyright infringement wasn't really a thing for a long time. So yeah. There, I mean, Zaz was selling everything. I mean, you drive down the street and it'd be like, used tires. Here's Zach Ayoka, like giving his, you know, thumbs up for the used tire shop on the corner, you know?
Great.
It was everything. So you'd see him everywhere. And it was always like this symbol of the fun loving, can't get him down, Brazilian, you know? And it's funny because he's sort of adopted as like a symbol of all Brazilian culture. But that is very Rio de Janeiro. Like that attitude and that like laissez-faire, like, okay, it's all right. That's a very Rio, very cool, you know. They hit it right on the head with that vibe.
Now, I am curious to hear what you think. I've never been to Brazil, but I have heard people say that he is like Mickey Mouse in Brazil. Like how much you see Mickey Mouse here, that's how much you see him in Brazil. Is that, would you say that's accurate?
I would say yes and then some, because here we don't want to get sued. So we won't put Mickey's face on everything.
Yeah.
Whereas down there, they're like, you know who sells this? Zach Ayoka.
So,
I mean, it is like Mickey Mouse, but it's, I don't know. It's like Mickey is a national treasure, but in, this is a different way. This is like a, you know, like if Mickey had the American flag on his chest, you know what I'm saying? Like this is
a
very
mascot
like,
for the
exactly.
Country.
Like, no, he's ours. This is us. Like, this is for us. Like Walt made it for us.
Yes.
You know, so, it's very beloved. It's very dear to everyone. And like, even if you don't care about cartoons or anything, you love Zé Carioca because he's the representation of that Brazilian, you know, joie de vivre or whatever you want to call it, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's absolutely true that he's like the Mickey Mouse. It's like, you know, he's like the country's mascot.
I did a little look-see at the Zé Carioca hashtag on Instagram, and almost all of it is people sharing about merch, but in Brazil. And I'm like, they have him on like just tons of shirts at Target. I want to go to a Target there and get stuff.
I know, same here. I'm like calling my cousins. I'm like, dude, hook a brother up. They're like, that's not usually the way this works. We ask you to send us stuff. I'm like, it's okay.
I really want all that stuff. They have a lot of cool merch of them on it. It's really awesome. So can you tell us a little bit, or tell us how did it come about that you began voicing him in DuckTales?
Well, I had been, you know, auditioning and working on different animated shows for a little while. And I just got, and what happens is our agents will email us an audition and it'll say like, this is a character, da, 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 this is what they're looking for. And then come up with a voice for it. And if you hear back, you got it. If you don't, you didn't. So it's pretty much just like shooting shots into the void, you know, and anytime it comes back, you know, you got it, or at least they're interested. However, with this job, when I saw what it was, I went crazy. I called my agent. I was just like, mine. I want this. I know this. I know this character from birth. I'm going to do everything I can to, you know, and she's probably very politely, you know, like, okay, bring it. Show me what you can do, you know? And I booked it, and it was, it immediately went from like joy and ecstatic to a sense of responsibility, because I really wanted it to be good. And this new iteration of DuckTales is so good and so smart.
I'm getting goosebumps just seeing you. Oh, I love it. It's so good.
I love them so much. And so like having the opportunity to be a part of the family as well as be a character and get to say they're like, they write the best stuff. Like I don't have to make up darn near anything, you know? So like, it was just such a gift, you know? But then, immediately I started getting scared because I was like, oh God, don't screw this up.
That's always the thing of like, this cool thing happened. Oh shoot. Now I got to do it right.
Yeah.
It was like, the nice thing is though, is that like when you know, and you love something so much, like especially like, you know, Frank and Matt and Madison and all, and the whole team over at DuckTales, they love this stuff so much and they care about it so deeply. I mean, they're like, no, we're going to take care of this. Like we're going to, because all we want is for someone to do it cool. You know, like you guys better do it cool, man.
Do like, it
these are
cool.
Our toys. Do it cool. And so,
When you record, are you, I mean, I hear voice actors typically are by themselves. Do you ever get to record with your fellow castmates in DuckTales, or is it typically by yourself?
Typically by yourself. I still have not met Tony, who plays Donald, but yes. When I went to do the first record for Zay, Arturo, who plays Panchito, was just finishing up, or was close to finishing up. So I got to go in and listen to him, and he was singing the song. Aww. And we had never met. But within minutes, I was like, I want to be in there with him. Like, I just want to be in the room. Uh-huh. And so, like, next thing you know, like, I'm just standing there in the room and we're like hugging, never having met each other. And we're just like so excited. We're just like, oh my God, can you believe this? Like, my dad, like my uncle, dude, my aunt. So I just sat there and he sang and he was jumping around and spilled water on himself. And we're just like cheering each other on. And it was so cool. But it's very rarely like that. So it was like, it was like Arturo and I met, and it was like we understood the responsibility and the joy of the gig. And mm-hmm. so we were just there to support each other, whatever we needed. I was like, dude, you want to do this standing on my back? Rock on, let's do this. You know, like, how can we make this as cool as possible, you know? Yeah. And that was it. And so subsequently on in subsequent episodes, I've bumped into him here or there just at the record. And we just sort of, you know, give each other a hug. And it's very nice. It's sort of like it's like a little like mini fraternity, you know, for like these young Latin guys who are just like, dude, can you believe this? Like, this is nuts. Like, can you imagine like we like told our 6-year-old selves, you know, like.
Yeah.
Crazy.
That's interesting. Melanie and I, we were at Bowers Museum in Orange County. We were at this, it was some sort of event. I can't even remember exactly what the event was, but Tony, who voices Donald, was there. And it sounded like he said he had been obsessed with Donald since he was 6, and his mom would do the voice of Donald, and she taught him how to do a Donald voice. So this was like a surreal experience for him. So I love that you all three had that with your ducks.
So great.
You're not all ducks, but you know, your DuckTales characters is really cool.
To our fans out there, you know, like I was doing the same thing when I was a kid. I was imitating any cartoon I could, you know, I could hear. I mean, look at, you know, a brilliant actor, Eric Bauza, you know, fantastic voice actor. He's doing, you know, all the Looney Tunes stuff because he's such a huge fan that he's a computer. The guy's just got it down, you know? Mm-hmm. So like, you know, if you work at it, that could be you, you know, kids in 20 years. Just work at it.
So when you were getting ready to go for this role, did you go back to the original movie? Did you just feel it in your bones? It was just like, I have this voice. It's fine.
Yeah. It was a combination of I know this guy and I know what I want to bring. Like, I was very intent on making it intrinsically Brazilian. Like, I wanted him to be not only very authentically Brazilian, but I wanted him to be carioca. Like, I want him to say idiomatic expressions that people from Rio say, because people from Rio have a very specific accent. So as opposed to São Paulo, where the people talk much faster and is much more metropolitan, is quicker, that carioca is not from São Paulo, bro. No, it's like, he's not like that. You know, he's okay. I tell you, I pay you next week. Okay, don't worry. I pay you back later. Relax, brother. You know, so there's that sort of things. Or anytime I could, and I have to say both Frank and Matt and Madison, I mean, the whole DuckTales team, they have allowed us for authentic idiomatic expression, because I'll say, like, here would be a perfect time to shoot a little zinger in Portuguese that all the Brazilian listeners will be like, oh, like, I heard it, you know. So those little things are the candy, you know, like the little insider, you know, Easter eggs, so to speak, that I always want to flavor it with, so that they're just like, dude, did you hear what Zach Carioca said? Like, did you hear what he said last night? Like, that's so, like, who thinks of that, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's why I'm here, guys, so I can throw that little Soussaint on top to all the genius you guys already brought, you know, and there we go.
Yeah, I mean, that's ahead.
That's why it's important to have, to have that, you know, when you have a character like that, to have someone voice it who has that cultural knowledge and the family and who has grown up in the culture to voice that character. It brings that important authenticity that I think someone like you would bring to Zay Carioca.
That's what I hope to be able to keep doing it for, you know, for as long as they'll have me.
Yeah.
And it sounds, you know, like just the whole DuckTales experience sounds like a really great crew. I've seen Frank Agones, you know, writer, co-executive producer, I think probably every title under the sun for DuckTales.
Yeah.
He's tweeted about you more than once saying that he's never, he's just saying how passionate you are about voicing this character and he can't get over it.
Well, he's not wrong. He's a sweetheart and he's, you know, it's, I love it. It means a lot to me. You know, so like, I really want to do a good job for, you know, for my little cousins, for all my cousins' kids, you know, for my kids. Like, it's special, you know. I mean, it's Disney, man. You know, like Disney means a lot to me. It always has, you know. So like, you know, the VHS, like the collection, how we used to have all the tapes next to each other, and you could always tell, like, you know, that was my house, you know. And so, it's just a combination of like love and responsibility and just wanting it to be as good as possible, you know. Like, I wanna, and here's the thing is that like, I trust Frank and Matt and Madison, like I trust their words, and I also trust them that like if I throw an ad lib out there, they're just like, that ain't gonna work. And I'm like, okay, it doesn't
work. It's fine,
you know, because like none of us actors ever do 22 minutes of perfect take, you know. Like we'll do one here and there, and then those geniuses get together and they Frankenstein it together and they make us sound amazing. But like, you know, they're the ones who were in charge, you know. Like, we're just incredibly lucky to have these, you know, painters and musicians and composers, for lack of a better word, making this art that we get to be some of the notes and some of the colors in, you know.
And did you have to sing for your audition?
Yeah, but I did. I sang, but I didn't even sing the Three Caballeros song. I sang like some Brazilian bossa nova in Portuguese, like didn't even try to sing in English. I just sang like Girl from Ipanema in Portuguese or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, it was one of those things where like, you know, I was like, follow that.
Mic drop.
I sang in Portuguese and like, dared them not to book me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you've got to pull out all the stops.
Exactly. It's like, if I don't go completely all out, then I'm going to hate myself. So like,
yeah.
If it takes me being a little bit arrogant and being like, sorry, you know, like respectfully mine.
Right. Respectfully. Bernard.
Yeah. I mean, Jess and I both have a theater background and sometimes you just feel like this role is mine and you just know it. You feel it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
I find a lot of, I don't know about you guys, but I grew up training. My training first started as musical theater. And so I see a lot of similarities when I was training with musical theater to Shakespeare. And then Shakespeare to animation was also very similar. So I find that like musical theater, Shakespeare, animation is all very similar insofar as the training and how you use it.
I want to learn more about your perspective on that. So how is it similar to you? Like I can see the through line, like Jess and I both have been in musical theater and done Shakespeare, but how does animation relate to that for you?
For me, like the connection I always had was like, I was growing up, I went to college, to University of Michigan for musical theater, right? And while I was there, there was a lot, there was a great class about breaking down a song as a story. Like, what's the story that you're telling and breaking it into the intro, the meat, and then, you know, the act one, act two, act three, or act four, you know, whatever it may be. And so breaking a song down like that and like seeing in a musical where like they're talking, and then they turn to the audience to sing is no different than two characters doing a scene and then one of the characters leave and now it's time for Iago to give his monologue to the audience. You know, it's like those soliloquies, those sort of use of breaking the fourth wall are very typical in musical theater. And taking a step further, now you have the characters in musical theater. For example, a good friend of mine, Todd Bonapane, wonderful musical theater actor, fantastic voice, great characters, should be doing animation tomorrow, you know, because he's just got a great energy, that sort of musical theater-y, I don't know, the quirkiness, the childlike enthusiasm. That's all stuff that you find in animation all over the place. Like the people that I've worked with that I've truly been like inspired by and awed by, like watching Tom Kenny work, You're just like, dude, he's just a big kid. Like, he's just having the time of his life in there. And it's like, that's the juice, you know?
Yeah. I think musical theater gives you that versatility in your voice. And then that ability to imagine, to use your imagination, because when you're in theater, you don't have a beach, a real beach right in front of you. You have to envision everything. And in the
you might just have the Zorro parking lot.
Yeah, you might have the Zorro parking lot. And in a recording studio, you have to do the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of, and like you said, just the training. It's just, it's all music, you know, it's all tempo and music. The acting is just tempo and music. It's the intonation of how you speak. It's how loudly, how softly, how, you know, it's all music to me, you know. And the beauty of animation and that I like is that you really aren't bound by losing your hair, you know. You're not bound by, you know,
wrinkles
or whatever it may be, you know.
I'm pointing to my own.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just, it's the work, you know. I have no interest in I don't care about, like, what was that wonderful quote that Ving Rhames said about Stanislavski? Love the art in yourself, don't love yourself in the art. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, if you make it about the work and make it about having fun and enjoying it and making the best stuff you can, then, you know, the rest of it's kind of gravy, you know? Yeah. And so, but animation's tough, man. And VO is a slog. Like, you just got to keep doing it, keep doing it, keep doing it, and keep getting rejected and rejected and rejected. And then eventually, you know, it comes
you
around.
You might be Zane Carioca.
Yeah, if you're lucky. I mean, but come on, that's such a, that, I always feel like, come on. It'd be like, hey, Jess, they're doing the Jess cartoon and they're wondering if you might want to have a part in it. It's like, yeah.
Yes, you know, so I do.
Like, the Brazilian role. I mean, sure. If I was like, you know, playing some, like, you know, something completely unlike me, then I would be like, even, you know, I'd be more. But this is like, dude, they're writing this. I'm a Brazilian guy, you know?
So you just knew it. You just knew it.
I just got a little lucky, really, really.
It was
lucky.
Yours.
Yeah, well, believe me, like, when the opportunity came, I attacked it. But I also happened to be extremely fortunate to have the opportunity to be here and get the email that day. You know, like, it's
of
just,
of course, yeah.
You never know, man.
That is true, yeah. Yeah. Well, we had to geek out on acting for a second, so thank you for indulging.
So we talked about DuckTales, which of course is one of the newer iterations that we see the three Caballeros in. And Melanie, I think you're going to chat to us about some other ways we can see the legendary trio.
Oh, yes, I sure am. So there is an animated series called Legend of the Three Caballeros, and some people don't even know about it. So I'll tell you what it is and how it came about. Legend of the Three Caballeros is an adventure cartoon series that reimagines the relationship between Donald, Panchito, and Jose, or Zay. In this alternate universe, the three birds are down on their luck strangers who inherit a dilapidated cabana full of magical treasures. They meet a Greek goddess named Xandra, who tells them they're the ancestors of a heroic trio called the Three Caballeros, and they set out on a mystical quest to fulfill their legacy and save the world. Unlike most of Disney's other animated series, Legend of the Three Caballeros was developed through Disney Interactive, not Disney Television Animation. So where this show debuted is so wild, I have to tell you about it. The show was actually finished even before the new DuckTales reboot was produced, but wasn't immediately released. It was originally intended to be aired in the summer of 2017 as a series of specials and a movie, but it ended up debuting as a series in the Philippines on the Disney Life app on June 9th, 2018. It premiered on the Disney Channel in Southeast Asia on January 1st, 2019. And then the series was released in the U.S. as part of the Disney Plus launch on November 12, 2019. And there is one season and 13 episodes of the show currently available on Disney Plus. I couldn't figure out why the Philippines. I have no idea. The Philippines.
I thought you were about to say, like, Brazil, Mexico. I don't know. You know?
That would make
sense. Entire country of Brazil was like, what is this? What? Does anybody tell me what this is? And I was like, I don't know. I'm like, I had no idea.
Yeah, so many articles were like, there's a Caballero series on an app. What is happening in the Philippines?
That's kind of odd that it debuted on an app. Like, not even on a state television station.
Exactly. I mean, I think it's because it was made by Disney Interactive. But you know, it's such a weird thing about its premiere, but luckily it's available to us on Disney Plus. And so I watched some of it, and the series has a real kind of Disney afternoon feel, both in the animation style and the adventurous plot lines. And it also features Daisy Duck and her triplet nieces, April, May, and June, kind of standing in for the nephews, Huey, Dewey, and Louie. And we don't know if there will be a second season of the show, but I imagine that even if there were plans to do so, that wouldn't go into production anytime soon. And this is just me speculating, but it also seems unlikely there will be a season two because the series seemed like a complete package story. And we now have the new DuckTales to watch for more adventures with the Three Caballeros. But I don't know if you'll agree with me, Renato, but they need to be on the show more.
I agree with that.
I think so, sure.
Yeah, we need more Three Caballeros on DuckTales.
There's still hope for the... We have more episodes coming, you know?
They have more episodes! They have more episodes coming! Well, I have watched Legend of the Three Caballeros practically every day because Amelia... either every morning watches DuckTales or Legend of the Three Caballeros. It's one or the other. This morning it was DuckTales. Yesterday it was Legend. But when she binge watched Legend of the Three Caballeros on Disney Plus, she wanted to watch more. And I was like, those are all the episodes. And she cried.
Oh, oh poor Amelia.
Okay, I sound so mean that I'm laughing. This was like, you know, in December, and she's like, hasn't cried about it since. But
no,
it was just
you
so
were
cute.
You weren't laughing at the time.
I wasn't laughing at the time.
It, like, at the time when your kid cries over something small, it's like, it breaks your heart. But then later you could be like, okay, this is cute. And you can laugh about it.
Yeah. And we at the 75th anniversary D23 event I went to for the Three Caballeros this past February, they had people who worked on that show there that they were interviewing. They were talking about the extensive research they did into the original and how they tried to put in all these Easter eggs from the original film. It was really cool.
Hey, good for them, man.
Yeah.
I think was it I think Bowser the one who did Zacariaca in that one?
Yeah.
I thought so. We talked about that. He was just like, dude, I got some great stuff I gotta send you. I'm like, please do.
Oh, so you two know each other?
He and I met on Woody Woodpecker. We were doing he's Woody and I'm the Brazilian monkey. If you need a Brazilian, call Nardo. So we got to work together and we chatted. Great dude, Toronto boy, good man.
That's really cool.
Yeah. It's nice that there's no like West Side Story rivalry between you two where you're snapping and facing off.
I get enough West Side Story with Bernardo being my name, you know, it's just kind of typical.
Yeah. All right. So when you can't meet Bernardo, you can meet other iterations of the Three Caballeros in the Disney parks when they're back open, right? So they often make appearances at the parks. And in the past, you could meet them at Disney California Adventure during the Viva Navidad celebration, where they also appeared in an outdoor parade and show in the Paradise Gardens area of the park. And I watched a YouTube video of the show and I was dancing. It's so much fun. I really hope they bring
it back. I
want
to see that.
It's so good. They have a whole show in California Adventure where they dance. They have their own float and they all three dance. It's
so see that. Yeah, it's my kids would freak out.
It's amazing. Yeah. You have to.
And they do a like a mariachi version of Simply Having a Wonderful Christmas Time. And I do not like that song. But when I hear the mariachi version, I really like it. It's really good.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So they have that celebration, and the Caballeros meet and greet characters have also been spotted at Walt Disney World at the Mexico Pavilion in Epcot, as well as Dancing Up a Storm during the Discovery Island Carnival at Disney's Animal Kingdom. And I was surprised to see on YouTube that there are meet and greets with the Caballeros at the overseas Disney parks, too. Guests have met them at Tokyo DisneySea.
And they get all the best characters.
Right.
Tokyo one's crazy.
Yeah.
It's just crazy characters all the time there. It's great.
Yeah. And they've also been seen at Disneyland Paris during their Halloween festival. And there was also a limited time private show for invited guests at Disneyland Paris featuring musical montages from Disney movies that was called Disney Dreamers Everywhere. And the Three Caballeros had their own song and dance number to their theme song, which is on YouTube if you want to watch it.
I do want to watch. I know Amelia does.
Yeah, exactly.
They need their own song number in World of Color. I think a World of Color Three Caballeros segment would be really cool.
Yes. And I have had that theme song stuck in my head for two 2 weeks. I'm just walking around the house and I can't remember all the words. So I'm just like that, just walking around the house doing that all the time. Yeah. Yeah. So if you want a more reliable way to see the caballeros, though, you can catch them on some of the Disney park rides. They're always there. They might not be standing
Well, they did briefly replace Jose with a pot of flowers after he fell over.
Oh, well, when they're working, they're always there.
Yes, yeah.
Poor Jose.
Let's pour a little bit out for our boy Jose. He had a tough day.
So they appear as kind of marionette-like figures on several versions of the It's a Small World attraction. So when Hong Kong Disneyland opened in 2005, that park's version of It's a Small World featured Disney characters, including the three caballeros, that were made in a similar style to Mary Blair's original singing dolls, and each character is located in their corresponding region of the world. Then in 2008, the three caballeros were added to the Disneyland ride, along with a couple dozen other Disney characters as part of a sort of major ride refurbishment. They also were added to the Tokyo Disneyland version of the ride as part of a similar refurbishment in 2018, which coincided with the park's 35th anniversary. Disney characters are not included in the versions of the ride at Disneyland Paris and Walt Disney World, and Shanghai Disneyland doesn't even have a Small World attraction, so you can't see the three caballeros there. However, if you are in Walt Disney World, you can see a whole ride featuring the caballeros. We just were talking about those animatronics, but that is on the Gran Fiesta Tour, a slow-moving boat ride in the Mexico Pavilion at Epcot and Walt Disney World that takes you on a journey through Mexico. And here's the description from the park's official website, if you don't mind me reading it.
No, not at all. Please do.
¿Dónde está Donald Duck? Donald's disappeared south of the border, and it's up to the other two caballeros from the musical trio, Panchito, the Mexican charro rooster, and Jose, or Zay, Carioca, the Brazilian parrot, to find him. Cruise down the Rio Grande on a dark boat ride past some of the most famous sites and cities in Mexico. Is that the missing mallard climbing a Mayan pyramid in Chichen Itza? Hilarity and hijinks ensue as the birds go in hot pursuit of their wayward friend through this fun-filled ride for all ages. Inspired by the 1944 Disney film, The Three Caballeros, your adventure comes to life against a backdrop of live-action footage, hand-drawn animation, and the jaunty musical score from the movie. I thought that description was really cute.
Also, I love how we're continuing our pattern of every single episode where we talk about Disney history, there's shenanigans ensuing. That phrase always pops up.
Oh, yeah. Shenanigans, hijinks.
Hijinks ensue. I love the alliteration, the missing mallard. That's great. That was great.
So this attraction was originally called El Rio del Tiempo and was a ride through of Mexico's history featuring Small World style animatronics, many of which are still featured on the ride. And in 2007, it was updated to its current version and renamed Gran Fiesta Tour, starring the three caballeros, with audio animatronics of the characters added to the ride in 2015. These are the only audio animatronics of the caballeros that exist in any Disney park, and they have an interesting backstory. So,
yes,
they were originally designed in the late 1960s by Disney artist and Imagineer Bill Justice to be
that part- long ago?
Yes, that long
wow.
ago. Wow. To be part of an elaborate audio animatronic show in Fantasyland at Walt Disney World's Magic Kingdom. The show was called Mickey Mouse Review and featured Mickey as the conductor of an orchestra full of Disney characters with the total of 81 animatronic figures. I was astounded. That is so many figures for them to create.
I know, and maintain. Even more than Hall of Presidents.
Yeah, exactly.
It's crazy.
And the three caballeros animatronic figures, along with Mickey Mouse, were featured in a gallery during the Magic Kingdom's first preview before the park opened. So I thought that was fun that they had Mickey on display and they had the three caballeros and none of the other characters. So that kind of goes to show how
popular. I think a lot of them were repurposed for other things, right? Like Splash Mountain or things like that.
Well, I will get to that.
Oh, okay. Oh, sorry, yeah. Jumping in.
The show debuted on Walt Disney World's opening day, October 1st, 1971. And it was the first ever computer programmed stage show and featured nearly 80 individually recorded soundtracks. During the show, a variety of Disney audio animatronic characters would perform songs from their respective movies, like Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs and Alice surrounded by the singing flowers from Wonderland. The Three Caballeros also performed their iconic theme song and then would pop up in various locations around the theater. So I thought that was cute that they kind of kept making appearances in the show.
Yeah, I'd love to see that.
Yeah, yeah. The Mickey Mouse Revue lost popularity over the years, downgrading from an E-ticket attraction to a D-ticket, but that wasn't the real reason it closed at the Magic Kingdom. In 1979, the Oriental Land Company signed a deal with Disney to develop Tokyo Disneyland. When reps from the company visited Disneyland and Walt Disney World to get ideas for the Tokyo park, they ended up choosing the Mickey Mouse Revue as one of their opening day attractions. They loved the music, they loved that it included all the characters, so that was one of their top choices. Disney decided that rather than build an entirely new version for Tokyo, they would just pack up the show and move it overseas.
Wow.
Yep. So they shipped the whole thing over to Tokyo. The last performance of the Mickey Mouse Revue at Walt Disney World was in September of 1980, and then the show was moved to Tokyo Disneyland and lasted at that location until 2009, when it was replaced with Mickey's PhilharMagic. The audio animatronics from the show, or their original character molds, were said to have been added to existing rides in other parks for a time, whether it was temporarily or whether, you know, the mold was used to create a new character for the ride. But the Three Caballeros, the actual animatronics, found a permanent home in the finale of the Gran Fiesta Tour once there were funds to update their technology in 2015. So instead of, you know, just the animated sequence at the end, they now had these beautiful, updated animatronic figures that had been recycled from the Mickey Mouse Revue. So,
and so yeah. they didn't go to the Tokyo version when they...
They did go to the Tokyo version.
Oh, okay.
And then once the Tokyo version shut down...
Oh, gotcha.
And they put in Mickey's PhilharMagic, they brought a lot of the animatronics back.
So wild that they're that old.
I know, yeah.
I mean, and updated, but still...
Yeah, they were on display for a while because they didn't have the money to or the means to update the technology. And then in 2015, they were able to update those little guys and have them in the ride. So I thought that was really a fun little tidbit.
That is really cool.
Yeah, yeah. We were wondering, Bernardo, we were talking earlier about It's a Small World, and we were asking you about seeing those figures in person, and
what does it feel like now that you're one of those characters?
It's pretty amazing. I had forgotten that I was even a part of it, and then suddenly we're on there, and I'm just kind of enjoying the time with my daughter and my son and my wife, and then there we are, and it was like, oh my gosh, you know. And then my wife, you know, she was fumbling for the camera, and you know, we snapped pictures, and I was just so happy. My dog is freaking out. She's very excited.
We love dogs.
We love dogs.
She's demanding love. She's like, why aren't you paying attention?
You can bring her on.
Nala, dude. This is Nala.
Oh, hi, Nala. Oh, I saw her little tail, like, do just a little wag.
I know.
Happy doggy.
We're talking to her. She can't even hear us, but we're like,
I know. Ah! Oh, that's true. We're all wearing headphones. She can't hear. Why are we saying hi?
Oh, she's cute. Oh, my gosh. Oh, well, my goodness.
Hi.
We can't thank you enough for coming on and talking to us about these amazing experiences voicing Zé Carioca. I love hearing you talk about it. You have so much passion about the role.
Well, thank you.
And I thought something that was fun about this episode is that we kind of have the Three Caballeros on this episode, because obviously you're representing Zay. I have Mexican heritage, so I can be Panchito. And Jessica has Disney running through her veins, and she has a cute outfit for every character. So
I have a Donald Duck phone case next to me. Right now.
So we have our Donald Duck. Yeah.
Great.
Perfect.
Oh, my gosh. Well, Bernardo, could you let our listeners know where they could find you on social? And if you don't mind, I would love if you could maybe sing a little piece of the Three Caballeros.
Yeah. Sure. My Insta is, what is it, Bernardo DePaula, 1970s. I'm so bad at social.
You're a Twitter guy. It's okay.
It's Bernardo DePaula, 1976. And then on Twitter, I'm BDP's nuts. BDPS nuts.
We're going to share socials in the show notes, too, so people could just do a quick little click.
It's just BDPS nuts.
All right.
Great.
I was tired of saying something not silly, and I can only be serious for so long. So
you really, I mean, how can you, How can you maintain the seriousness? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Mel, Jess, thank you so much for having me. I had a blast. Anytime you guys want to chat, just hit me up. I'm always around.
Yeah.
Oh, well, my gosh.
When you were talking about revisiting the Goodwill tour, maybe when we revisit that.
Bring it. I'd love to hear it. And I'd love hearing some of the information about the, I mean, I'd heard just from my dad some sort of small facts, but I love getting sort of the deep dive.
I spent a lot of time reading this because I found it personally fascinating. So yeah. I just stopped myself at some point because I'm like, I'm just building rabbit holes and going further down them. Yeah. And this is going to be a 5-hour long episode.
This is what we're for, man. This is what these podcasts are for. It's for those of us who just want to, you know, deep dive to get all nitty gritty with the Disney, man.
Exactly.
And if you want to find Cartoons to Castles on social, we're just Cartoons to Castles on Instagram, and we're Cartoons Castles on Twitter. And if you want to share a podcast, just share cartoonstocastles.com because it lists everywhere that we're streaming. And for my socials, I'm the Healthy Mouse on Instagram and Healthy_Mouse on Twitter. And Melanie, where can we find you?
Yeah, this time I'll say mine instead of yours. I am Keep Quirky on Instagram and Keep Quirky OC on Twitter. And thank you for listening. And thank you, Bernardo.
And Bernardo, can you send us off with a little like Zay Carioca line or how he would maybe say goodbye?
Everybody, this is Zay Carioca wishing you all a very, very happy rest of your day. Cheers, boys, amigos.
Yay! Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
Thanks for listening.
Till next time. Keep dreaming.